Here we are then, episode 3 of Generic Streaming Service and Chill, the entire smorgasbord of movie and TV related news with myself. And once again joined by FlickeringMyth.com's Luke Owen. Afternoon, Luke.
Afternoon, sir. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Pretty good. And it's been an amazing week at the cinema and on TV. I've actually got myself down to the cinema to watch Spectre after a real argument with all my friends who were like, can't do this day, can't do that day. And we eventually found a day that they could. Even though my local cinema, right, I don't know whether this is like a thing throughout the entire country, are actually showing Spectre 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of them. I've got, like, you know, massive amounts of screening on. Like, every sort of couple of minutes, there's a new screening that's popping up. I think our local cinema, we've got two round our way, that have pretty much sort of foregone any other film that's on and just put Spectre on every single screen.
That seems to be the plan, like, in the one I was at. It was a View Cinema, actually, and they're showing it at, like, 10 to 4 in the morning and stuff like that. And there's a part of me that just wants to go at 10 to 4 in the morning just to see who's there, but also just to see how annoyed the staff are going to be as soon as I turn up.
Yeah, I was going to say, you wouldn't want to be working that shift now, would you?
Just sitting there,
like, because bear in mind, like, it's not like there's going to be other things to do while you're waiting for people to show up, apart from, I don't know, restock the suites and that, you know, but waiting for people to get out of the cinema screen. But, I mean, I know that we are, as a country, we're kind of sort of we're programmed to love James Bond, but are we programmed to love it enough to go see it at 4:30 in the morning?
I don't think we are. I'm not going to lie to you. You say, right, I'm going to get up early just before work. Why? Oh, well, I want to miss traffic, but I also want to go and watch James Bond as well before I get in. It's not going to work, is it?
Well, I was going to say, that is someone who's just like, you know, the team Spectre in the evening, they were like, you know what, I'm not entirely sure if I liked it enough. I better go again at 4:30 just to make sure before I go to the office, before anyone asks me.
And I'm going to pre-book just in case there's a rush on that day as well, just to make sure. But yeah, you know, I watched Spectre and I really enjoyed it, but I'm going to throw this one out there. Skyfall's better.
That is the sort of general consensus. I think a lot of people have been disappointed. And this actually kind of ties into the problem with hype, I think. I think what Spectre suffers from is a lot of people loved Skyfall so much because it was very good, and this hasn't quite lived up to the expectations that Skyfall set. And therefore, despite the fact that it is good, the majority of people are coming out, you know, like yourself, saying, like, do you know what? It's not as good as Skyfall. And because it's not as good as Skyfall, it's kind of seems a bit disappointing.
Yeah, I'm definitely understanding that. I think people will be disappointed by it because it is not on that level. Even though Sam Mendes is back, he's directing again, and the opening sequence is tremendous. That tracking shot is beautiful. It looks so good. The credit sequence, as we discussed on episode 2 last week, if you are into your octopuses or octopi or whatever you want to call them, for multiple octopuses, you're going to love it. But yeah, there was just something missing. Although I've got to admit, the best part about it is Christoph Waltz.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, he's the best part of absolutely everything, really. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Inglourious Basterds, but I actually thought that Christoph Waltz was fantastic in that film. I think he is. Like, you know, that was the moment where everyone realised how great he was. And even, actually, you know, looking at something like Django Unchained, you know, again, I wasn't a massive fan of, but he is fantastic in it. He is an incredible actor, an incredible on-screen presence. And it's just like the hype thing that we're just discussing. And it's one of these things. I mean, it seems like every conversation I have seems to come back to Star Wars. But it's that worry I think we've had before with Star Wars, with The Force Awakens when it comes out in December, is that are we overhyping it to the point where are we going to get another 1999 on our hands with The Phantom Menace, where we all sit there and be like, I can't believe Star Wars is back. And then we're sitting there like, oh, it's actually not very good.
Oh, no, it can't happen. It can't.
Yeah, but I know, but we said that in 1999 as well.
That's true, that is true. And now we've got J.J. Abrams in charge. You know, doesn't get much wrong, does he? And of course, he's still got that thing over his head now that the meme's out there. If he messes this up, he is Jar Jar Abrams.
And that is something that he will never live down. Imagine being the man who ruined Star Wars. I mean, George Lucas has got to live with it for the rest of his life. But imagine being that man that ruined Star Wars for everyone.
Stop getting Star Wars wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Stop getting Star Wars wrong.
The trailer was actually on the front of Spectre last night, and it was the older trailer. It wasn't the new one that came out. I thought they might have just slid in the new one, but they didn't.
gutted. And Spectre, actually, it's going to be an interesting one sort of in the coming weeks, right? Next week in particular. There was the rumour yesterday that the first trailer for Captain America, The Winter Soldier, is going to be attached to Spectre when it's released in Russia next week.
How random is that? I mean, like, that's a very weird market, isn't it, to release that in?
Absolutely. A very, very bizarre market to release that in. But there are other rumours that have refuted that original claim and actually said that it's going to be attached to The Force Awakens when that comes out in December, which for my money actually makes more sense. They're both Disney properties. And I think that really does make much more sense to release it with The Force Awakens, and especially if you're going to get, you know, as many eyes on it as possible. You know, release it with a film that everybody is going to be going to see, you know, with the record-breaking numbers we were talking about last week in terms of box office. Those people are going to see the trailer for Civil War. I mean, we discussed this in the first episode. I've seen the trailer already because I was shown it the Disney previews. I'm not allowed to say anything about it, but I have seen it. And actually, I'm like, I don't even know why I brought it up. I can't say anything about it.
You can't. Stuff happens. Captain America's in it, and also Iron Man is as well. And that's pretty much all you can say, isn't it?
Yeah, there are characters, and they do stuff. That is about all I can say for it.
And that's the trailer right there. That's how it's going to go from now on. So this quite neatly segues. It's like we planned it, but we didn't. It neatly segues into another story, which actually I spotted on flickeringmyth.com, and it's all about Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which is on the way. Another Marvel property. The first film I thought was one of the better Marvel films that they've released, and it could have been starring a man who was in one of my favourite TV shows the past few years, True Detective. But it's not going to happen.
Absolutely, yeah. No, Matthew McConaughey has turned down the villain role for Guardians of the Galaxy 2. We don't know who the villain of the movie is. There's been plenty of rumours bouncing around of who it could be. But what we do know for sure is that Matthew McConaughey has turned it down. And that's, I don't know, I find that a bit disappointing. I find that really, because I love Matthew McConaughey as an actor. I really, really do. And I can understand why he would want to turn that sort of thing down. I think that he may look at those films perhaps below him. But I'm disappointed in McConaughey because I thought it would be something that he would take on. And I think he'd have been really, really great under the direction of James Gunn. Because like you, I absolutely loved Guardians of the Galaxy. It was easily the most surprising movie of Phase 2. And I actually had fairly high expectations for it because I quite enjoyed the Guardians comics, you know, from way, 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 way back in the day. And I really, really like James Gunn. He comes from a really schlocky horror background from the Troma universe. So I was very, very keen, you know, on seeing him take on such a big Marvel project. So I'm sad to see that McConaughey's not going to be in the movie. It's really disappointing. But you know, it's I don't know who they're going to turn to next. We've seen some of these big name stars turn down these movies now. Like Jake Gyllenhaal turned down Suicide Squad after Tom Hardy dropped out. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of these big name stars starting to turn these films down.
Yeah, which is interesting. I'm thinking, you know, there needs to be a bit of a change for their career. You know, is the comic book movie big for them? I'm not quite sure. Or do they just not fancy doing it? It's a bit of an odd one, isn't it? Because obviously it's box office gold every time. People go for these all the time. So you know you're going to be, you know, putting many people's bums on seats, if you will. So it's interesting that they're not doing it and they're going for other pictures.
And I think as well, if you can look at an actor like McConaughey, that perhaps, as I said, they might see these Marvel movies as just below their status on screen. Like McConaughey would much rather do a film like Mud or, you know, go with Christopher Nolan and do Interstellar or do something that really challenges the mind, as opposed to doing a bubblegum popcorn flick like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where all you're going to do is you're going to go in there, you're going to be caked in makeup, read the lines of dialogue that you're given, which probably aren't going to be particularly well written, and then that's it. And then you'll probably be killed off at the end of the movie, and then you're done with it. But that's 6 months of your life that you've spent preparing for that role when you could have been doing some smaller independent movies that actually do challenge you as an actor. And I think that's what some of these actors often look at. So Jake Gyllenhaal is a good example. You know, we just said that he was offered the role of Rick Flagg for Suicide Squad after Tom Hardy dropped out, but he decided against doing it because I think at this point of his career, Jake Gyllenhaal is more interested in doing movies like Nightcrawler or, you know, things like that where he can really challenge himself as an actor. he's done the big budget stuff before. You know, he did 2012. That was Jake Gyllenhaal, wasn't it? It was the,
yeah.
The Roland Emmerich one. Yeah. So he's kind of done that period of his life already, like that period of his career already.
He did The Day After Tomorrow, am I right, as well?
Day After Tomorrow, thank you very much. That's what I'm thinking of. 2012, the one with John Cusack.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no, you're right. So he's kind of already done that. So he can now go off and focus on doing these much smaller productions. And I'm wondering if McConaughey's also at that stage of his career. We talked about, you know, the reconnaissance we had a few years back, where he stopped being this kind of sort of foppy haired guy that leans against things on the posters of romantic comedies, and all of a sudden became this really, really great actor that was starring in these amazing movies. And I think he, you know, as an actor who's kind of built up this brand, you want to stay on top of that. So I'm unsurprised that he's turned it down. But as someone who loved Guardians of the Galaxy and loves the work of James Gunn, I would have liked to have seen him work. Would have liked to have seen those two work together.
I'm glad you've said that you like the work of James Gunn, because I do too. I love Slither, one of my favourite films a while ago. That's such a great movie.
Absolutely, yeah. And that was the movie that got him onto... into the Marvel world. You know, it was Joss Whedon absolutely loved Slither, and he was like, oh, if you want a guy to direct a movie, get James Gunn. This guy's fantastic. And I love him because, you know, he did a lot of work with Troma and Lloyd Kaufman, who was the director of things like The Toxic Avenger and Surf Nazis Must Die and these sort of, like, you know, very schlocky B-movies. So he'd come from this very visceral background, and I think that really translates into his movies like Slither, and again to something like Guardians of the Galaxy, where he's a very, very creative mind. And I really like that from directors, which is why I think the horror genre is actually one of the better genres for a director to really hone their craft within.
Yeah, I love horror movies, and you know what, it's that perfect time of the year for it, I guess, really, isn't it? You know, Halloween
Absolutely.
This weekend, plenty of amazing horror films are going to be rented, they're going to be watched. Do people still rent movies? Never down to the... They get them all on Netflix. they're all going... I went back to the 90s. They're all going to be watching these incredible horror films crafted by some of the best directors in the business. I think, you know, we've got to talk about the best horror films that are around, and not just the new ones, but the classics as well, because a good Halloween movie fest is definitely something that people have to do this weekend, isn't it?
Oh, I absolutely love it. Halloween is one of my favorite times of year because, you know, again, it's just kind of sitting down and you get together with your partners, with your friends, and you can just watch some of these amazing, amazing horror movies. And actually, sometimes it's even better when those horror movies aren't amazing and they're actually terrible and you can just have a great laugh watching them. There are times I always look forward to. I was looking forward to Halloween because me and my girlfriend always sit down and we watch like a big, you know, we watch a scary movie, quote unquote, or whatever you have. But there are times when, you know, every time a Friday the 13th rolls around and we could sit down and watch one of those movies from the Friday the 13th franchise. And it's just great fun to just be with people and watch horror movies together. And that was my teenage years. My teenage years was spent going down to the video shop with my friend's dad, and he would rent us horror movies. You know, 18s, we couldn't rent them. We were too young. But he would rent them for us, and we would take them back, and we would always, like, stay up really late to watch Child's Play 2 and, you know, watch, like, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 and things like that. And it's just great times. It's a really, really tremendous genre, and it's just, like, this is the perfect time to enjoy that.
Very much so, and you've mentioned Nightmare on Elm Street there, and that was one of my original favourites. That, you know, that character, Freddy Krueger, so iconic and so scary as well. I still remember seeing the adverts for, like, 3, which, of course, had Alice Cooper in it, and, you know, 4 again as well, and then going into the newer ones, and you got to kind of pay respect as well to dearly departed Wes Craven.
Absolutely,
an absolute master, a genius, and I've got a book at home. I don't know whether it's one you've read. I expect you will have. It's called Screams and Nightmares. It's all about the movies of Wes Craven.
I've not actually read that, no.
Very good book. Very, very good book. It's like a black cover just with the hat and the glove on it. And it is absolutely amazing. Going through everything he did, right, kind of right up to the Scream movies. Real big fan of Nightmare. I think it's a big shame that the reboot was so terrible because it just didn't need to happen.
So bad.
Oh, they're talking of rebooting it again, aren't they?
They are rebooting it again, absolutely. But I think, actually, having said that, after the 2010 remake, I think the best thing to do is just start again.
Yeah.
It was a really, really terrible, terrible, terrible film. Like, I had bad juju about that film when they first announced it. When they released that trailer, and I was watching it with a friend of mine who wasn't the biggest Nightmare on Elm Street fan. And at the end of it, I turned to him and I said, they're trying to make Freddy Krueger a sympathetic character.
Mm.
And he said, what do you mean? And, like, you know, we went through the whole thing of just like, oh, you know, he's trying to say that it wasn't actually him. And the whole plot of that movie was Freddy Krueger wrongly accused? Whereas we as the audience already know
Yeah.
that he was rightfully accused. So it just feels like a really pointless misdirect. And I absolutely hate that remake with a passion. It really, it physically makes me angry how much I hate that movie. My
so
friends
bad.
And I, we get together and we, every month or so, we do like a marathon of movies. And we like pick a franchise and we watch every movie from that franchise back to back. We did Halloween actually a couple of years ago, funny enough, did all 10 films from that franchise back to back, which took us a long, old time. But we did Nightmare on Elm Street. It's one of our first ones. And just, I remember how angry we all were at the end of that franchise, because although it was great to do the marathon, we had to end on that remake, which was an awful way to end an evening.
Terrible way to, so bad, so, so bad. Got to ask you, what are your favourite horror movies? If we're putting together a little bit of a programme for somebody who wants to have a horror movie marathon on the night itself, what would you stick in there? So give us your top three.
Top three. Oh, that's a very good question. I think I'd always try and pick a slasher movie to throw in there, because I think that's a really good pivotal point of the horror genre. So maybe you've looked at something like maybe from the Friday the 13th, or from the Halloweens, or from Sleepaway Camp, or Don't Go Into the Woods Alone, that sort of thing. But I think if I was to go for like true greats of the genre, I would probably look at something like David Cronenberg's The Fly.
Oh, great film.
And a great film. Jeff Goldblum, one of his all-time best performances. I absolutely adore that movie. And actually, The Fly is a great example of how a remake can be better than the original, of taking the concept of a movie and improving upon it by twisting it and turning it into a different direction. And I love what David Cronenberg does with his version of The Fly. And similarly, one of the others I would have to put on my list is John Carpenter's The Thing.
Yes.
It's such a great movie. I was actually watching it with my girlfriend quite recently, actually. It was only a couple of months ago, and she'd never seen it before. And I don't think she was expecting to be as scared watching it as she was. And she was pretty scared by it and was very creeped out by all of the visuals and the beautiful practical effects that film has. Absolutely superb. So I think I'd probably have to go for those two. And then I think if I'm going to move something more modern, maybe I'd look at the Blair Witch Project, which I think is certainly an absolute masterclass within the horror genre of. It's a movie that could be made today. I think that's why I like the Blair Witch Project so much. Apart from the fact that we're oversaturated with found footage movies, that was a movie that created its own hype by making us all believe that the events in that film were true.
I remember the article that was in Rolling Stone that actually made it out that like it was actually true. It was completely focused. It was true.
And that was all their genius. They set up multiple websites over a period of time, so that if you were on the internet back in those days and you were researching the Blair Witch Project, you found all these websites that claimed to be by different people about the Blair Witch in the woods and all these people who had gone to try and find the Blair Witch and the spooky experiences that they'd seen. So when the film came out, I remember on Channel 4, they aired a documentary about this group of kids that went out, and that this film is a reenactment of that. And it just felt so real and so visceral. And it was an incredible time in horror. But again, that is the sort of thing you could never make today. With the internet and the way it is and the way social media works, you could never make a film like The Blair Witch Project, which is a real shame, actually, because it's a really, really great sort of film. But I think if I'm to round out my top three, I'm actually going to pick Scream.
Oh, yes. Classic. I watched that just after the sad news about Wes Craven passing happened, and it still works. I still like Scream. It's like 96, I think, was it? And it still works really well.
Absolutely, yeah. Next year, that's a terrifying thought, next year marks the 20th anniversary of Scream.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable. It's crazy.
And again, that is another film that I remember very vividly from my teenage years. Because 96, so I'd have been 11 when that film came out. So I was about 12. So about 12 years old when it came out on VHS. And renting it from the video store and taking it home to watch it. And just, I love Scream so much. I think it is an incredible movie. And as you said, as you quite rightly said, it really does stand the test of time. And the points that it makes about the horror genre still ring true. And what I like about the Scream genre is I like how it evolved through its series as well, because I actually really like Scream 4. Not a lot of people did, and I think I find quite bizarre. I think a lot of people seem to think it's a bit rubbish, but I actually think Scream 4's got a lot to say for itself about remakes and reboots and reimaginings of horror movies. And I think it's actually a very, very clever movie. And I absolutely love the Scream genre. And you know, as we are on the generic streaming service and chill podcast, all the Scream movies are available on Netflix to watch. So if you fancy doing yourself a bit of a marathon, you could sit down and watch all four of them on your Halloween night.
Yeah, definitely give that a go. Get them all racked up on your streaming service and check them out. I've got to actually have a proper marathon this Halloween. I'm going to do it, without a shadow of a doubt. I'm going to do it because I'm going to throw a few of mine in right now.
And yeah,
these are just some of my favourites. I love The Exorcist, one of my favourite films of all time. I've got the production notes at home, which I got when it was re-released at the cinema. They came out and I managed to get the production notes at Warner Brothers. And I took my friends to see it at the cinema because they'd never seen the film at all. And they were absolutely stunned into silence watching this. It was amazing. It still worked so many years later. William Friedkin, absolutely incredible movie. I want to watch The Exorcist again right now. I still want to watch the Blair Witch Project again. You've got that moving in my head at the moment.
The Exorcist, they're doing a new Blu-ray for that as well. They're releasing the whole anthology collection, giving it a big old Blu-ray release.
Oh, amazing.
I think that's coming out in the next couple of weeks as well, actually. I think it's out very soon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well worth a pickup, because you're right, The X is absolutely brilliant. Do you remember, actually, when they first showed it on Channel 4, when they were first allowed to show it? It was like 1997 or so, like 1998. And I remember taping it on the TV and then staying up really late to watch it and just being terrified by that film. Fantastic. Great choice.
Brilliant movie. As is this one as well, The Evil Dead. Oh, yes. I love this film. It's great.
Love The Evil Dead.
It is so good. The original is brilliant. 2 was a bit of a misstep. Army of Darkness was hilarious. But the original, so, so cool. And that book, I had the DVD, the one with that came in the book. The Book of the Dead.
The Necronomicon,
That kind of smelt after a little while. it was brilliant. I love that film. I love the effects. Again, practical effects, that kind of stuff. Sam Raimi making this brilliant, brilliant movie that is genuinely very, very terrifying. And I watched the remake. I actually didn't get the same kind of feel off that, but I loved this original version. So good. And I can't wait to see Ash versus the Evil Dead, the TV series as well, which I believe kicks off as well this weekend.
It's already been commissioned for a second season as well.
Love it.
I absolutely love it. But yeah, it's amazing. Actually, I was really surprised to hear you say that you thought the second one was a misstep, because I think a lot of people tend to think that Evil Dead 2 is better than the original, and I don't know where I sit on that. I might have to back and rewatch them again. I do really, really love the original, but like you said, it's Sam Raimi. It's, you know, it's one of the first films he ever did. He made a short and then made Evil Dead, which was based off that short. What I love about Evil Dead, have you read Bruce Campbell's autobiography?
Yes, If Chins Could Kill.
Yeah, absolutely. And it talks about how they were going around to like doctors' houses and people they knew to basically like fund the movie.
Yeah.
And they just made it all off their own back and just made this tremendous, tremendous movie. And just basically just went into the woods and just had a blast and just had so much fun making this film. And it's a beloved film to this day. Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
Amazing film. I love that to bits. I'm trying to think if I've got a third one right now, probably coming up in my head. I can't think. But I'm just going to throw, just for a bit of a laugh before we quickly move on, Freddy versus Jason, because it's hilarious. And Kelly Rowland from Destiny's Child's in it. What more do you need?
I know. And a film that was in development hell for so, so long. They first talked about doing Freddy vs. Jason in 1988.
Whoa!
That's sort of how far back this story goes. And it was around the time when Paramount wanted to do, they wanted to work with New Line, but they could never reach an agreement. And so because they couldn't do that, they made Friday the 13th Part 8, which is the New Blood, actually one of my favorites of the franchise. And that was originally set to be Jason versus Carrie. That all fell apart. So in there, they just had this girl who had telekinetic powers, which is why it feels very weird suddenly within the Jason universe that there's a girl with telekinetic powers that's fighting against him. But in the end, it was just stuck through development hell. It just kept getting pushed back. New writers came on board with new ideas. I've read all of the scripts that were written for Freddy versus Jason and all the bizarre ideas. One of the more interesting ones, which came out around sort of time, is Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which is that the Friday the 13th movies are actually movies, but based on real life events.
What?
And it's the trial of Jason Voorhees. And it's about the you know, this lawyer who's trying to defend this serial killer who's in court in the mask and everything and this, that, and the other. But through all that, there's also a dream demon that is Freddy Krueger that's also trying to get into the real world and burst through. It's a very, very interesting script. I don't think the film would have ever been made in the state that it was, but it was a very, very interesting idea and a really, really bizarre take on how to do a Freddy versus Jason movie.
I love that. It's different. Totally different. Horror movie's done and dusted, so Halloween this weekend. Can't wait for that. Let's move on to the big TV news of the week. Supergirl is started on Sky on Thursday night, so it'll be after you've heard this. And it launched in the States to massive numbers, didn't it?
14 million people tuned in to watch the first episode of Supergirl. Unbelievable numbers. Who'd have thought? Like, we talked about Supergirl a couple of weeks back, but who would have thought that it got to 14 million viewers on its opening episode? I've not seen the first episode. I know you have. And I'm very, very
yes.
curious to hear your thoughts because of the when we reported the news that it had 14 million viewers, a lot of the comments that were on our website were all just saying, and none of those people will come back for the next episode because it's rubbish.
I thought it was okay.
I'm very curious to hear what you think.
I thought it was okay. I kind of enjoyed it. Melissa Benoist, whatever your parents' name, I'm not quite sure, but she was a female lead in Whiplash, if you want to check her out. She was good. I quite enjoyed that. The take on Jimmy Olsen is very different to what people may think, but I like the character. I think he's really good. Callista Flockhart is decent. I don't know how long it's got in it, you know, it's good, but yeah, I think you're going to see a sharp drop next week.
That's interesting, yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people were saying. As I said in the comments section for on our website, just people saying like, no one's going to come back for this second episode, and they think that it's going to take a bit of a sharp turn. And I was a bit worried about the show. So when they released the first trailers for it. And, you know, they had as TV shows, they did those really extended trailers were about 5 minutes long, and they show you a lot of what to expect from the series. And I wasn't sure if I was enjoying it. And I actually quite like a lot of DC's TV output. Really like Arrow.
Yeah, love it.
I run hot and cold on The Flash, no pun intended. But at times I think it's great. Like, I loved them doing the Operation Flashpoint storyline throughout the first season. I thought that was great, but I actually didn't like any of the characters that were in it. But I really want to like Supergirl, so I'm actually...
I do too. I want to give it a go.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, and I want to give it a go. I want to see what's going to happen with it. I'm going to give it some time. I'll give it that anyway. But Supergirl, that's launched. It's on Sky One right now every Thursday. It's like Superhero where you get Arrow on Tuesday, I think. You get The Flash on Wednesday and then Supergirl. Just worried a bit about oversaturation, but that's another point we'll come to on another podcast, I think. Let's just round this up now. Let's just check on what's on the generic streaming services. Have you spotted anything amazing?
Do you know what? There hasn't been anything that's really struck my eye in terms of new releases. So I actually have really sort of nothing to offer for this week, apart from my usual suggestion of what we watch in the shadows, because that's an amazing film.
Let's all watch Narcos again.
Is there anything that you've spotted on there that's really grabbed your fancy?
No, because there's nothing really been amazing that's been added. I've just kind of got into Narcos, and again, I watched the film you just mentioned there, which was just amazing. What we're doing in the shadows is fantastic. But yeah, there's not much on there that's really jumping out at me.
It's disappointing, but as I said, you know, we were talking about in our Halloween sort of preview there. If you want to go, there's always some good horror movies attached to Netflix and Amazon Prime. And you'll always find at least three or four of the Friday the 13th movies, and you can probably pick any one of those and you'll have a good time. Never any Nightmare on Elm Street movies on there, which I always find to be rather disappointing.
I
think there was at one point they just had Nightmare on Elm Street 2 on there, Freddy's Revenge, which is, I mean, not a great entry in the series, if I'm being honest. And it's always like with the Halloween films, they only seem to have Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, which is, I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, one of the worst films in the franchise.
Not the best.
Apart from Halloween Resurrection with Busta Rhymes and Tyra Banks.
I remember that, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. A reality TV show trying to be set within the Michael Myers household that is being produced by Busta Rhymes and Tyra Banks. It is a dreadful movie.
Weird, random,
very,
awful.
Very weird. But yeah, unfortunately, there's nothing that I can see in the new releases that's really jumping out to me. So a poor week for our generic streaming services.
Whatever you do, just don't watch The Ginger Dead Man because it's terrible. Luke Owen, thank you very much for joining us. We'll speak to you next week, mate.
Thank you very much, sir. Speak to you next week.